3D6 down the line.
Okay, that is episode 65 in the books. Ted had to take a break early, but the rest of us are still here in the aftermath of that total fucking disaster.
I don't know what you mean.
Dude, I am such a fucking victim of RNG. As soon as a die roll is like so important, I'm like, I know I'm gonna blow this. Like if it's rolling for a gem, hey man, I'll get maximum power right there. But if it's rolling to see if I'm going to die, absolutely I will fail. And well, that's been my entire gaming life has been bad.
Well, one, I love that you went for it. I'm here for you. It's awesome. Love to ride the lightning. Yeah, I will like say it's a good example of the ideal game is one in which you never roll, quote unquote. Isn't just about like, oh, it's about fiction, which it can be. It's also about like contingent, like, you know, how can I minimize risk, right? It's really hard. Right. Now, we're in a situation where we want to have fun, and I had a blast. This is a great episode. But for me, I had a lot of fun. But it is a good example of like, man, even with a huge bonus, even with a lot of consideration, not an airtight level of consideration, and this, I want to hear John pipe in on this, even with like the Isocritus murder, for instance, it's still so risky.
So risky. Right?
You couldn't have never known. But it does feel like maybe a bias on our part, but it does feel like we always like, if it's an initiative role that will existentially affect the game, we've lost it every episode. For how many episodes now? Like between a couple campaigns, we're at like 60. What is this? Like 65 or so?
Yeah,
it was 65. Yeah.
How I don't remember how long. Point is this. Yeah, like hundreds of episodes. Of
so John, can I ask you
the role?
Go. Will you tell me what Irsko's or no Tresco's AC was? Like how? Like I had a +8 to hit him. Like what's his AC?
You can tell. I can't remember now.
Like 20 or like 16? Like
no, it was more like in the 16 area. Yeah, you missed.
I mean, that. I had a 50, but
you rolled really low, right? Like you ended up hitting an AC like 12 or something, right? With the bonuses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I eked out. I wanted you to get it. I gave you every bonus that I could reasonably give you. And you just rolled like shit. And and then the first killer was the Shrieker ending. Right. That was not an arbitrary thing by me. I actually looked up the Shrieker and it should have actually. Yeah, it had to end basically right then. And then and then obviously the second one was you losing initiative. That was painful.
I mean, that was brutal. Yeah. But I'm just going to say, and this is a quibble. It's a quibble. But physics, man, physics. Should not have allowed 5 baboons to attack me when a giant baboon is like right there. That's
three attacked you.
They have multiple attacks, my dude.
Multiple attacks, yeah.
I know, but like, come on. I'm just like, come on, man.
Well, I was going to do all 6. I made 3.
I know. All I needed was one hit point and I would have been invisible and then I would have gotten away.
Yeah, I did. I kind of hoped that I would. The reason I started running north was not to save my own ass, but I knew you could read invisible. You could read invisible, and I was like, I think I'm done so at this point, right? Like, irony that I don't know, yeah. And so I was just gonna start yelling and running, and like maybe loop, maybe donut back to the library. It doesn't really matter, didn't get there, right? But like, just a couple bad rolls will do that to you.
Just running down the hallway yelling like Judd Nelson in the Breakfast Club,
yeah, man.
That's what I was hoping the snakes were going to do, but it was just too far away from what you was, and it would already happen. Like it was too late. Like you guys were already dead when the whole distraction thing was going off. What one thought that kept coming to my mind the whole time is like, and it goes back to like what David was saying about depending on roles. Whenever there's a role involved, we lose. And the thing that I kept coming back to my mind was how often do we choose violence, right? Like as a team, most of the time we don't, sometimes we do. And every time that we do, when there's some kind of, ethereal, when there's a chance like that, we can miss or whatever. And when there's going to be a roll, it always ends up, I mean, we eke out somehow, but we never win. Like with the example was with the fight where Tresti died, right? Also on this level, also with baboons, we felt we were, you know, we felt our oats. We were really strong, and we saw, oh, we got these. These are just a few little baboons, and we did win. But as there were roles involved, you know, we lost a member of our party that we were trying to protect.
It was a pyrrhic victory. Yeah.
And that's, I think that's, obviously there's like a range in what you're playing and what you're doing that the consequence could be as lethal as it is here, which is always proven to be very lethal. But yeah, it's when we have chosen violence, we've usually chosen it at maximum advantage to ourselves and maximum lethality. It's been like brutal violence, right? It's been like, if we're going to do it, we're going to go as hard as we can because it's the most secure like type of it, which has always been interesting to me because like it feels extreme, but it's like the safest move for us, right? Like even in this scenario, we're basically going like, Mike and I both know the failure is death. We know, right? At that point, like that is the choice, literally down to a 50-50. Well, how fun is that though? How fun that the numbers on a 3 and 6 on your move side was everything. I don't know, gambling, but yeah. If you are going to play with dice, that's a fun way to do so.
But honestly, the odds of losing all three of those die rolls, any one of them would have changed the scope of the combat completely. If I'd made my move silent, I wouldn't have had to roll, and I would have been able to drop them. And if I'd hit them, maybe between that and also your ice blast, you would have died. And then the initiative, if we'd won the initiative, you could have slammed the door and run. You might still have died. I would have gone invisible and run. We at least would have had a chance. But we blew all three of those, and it was all me. I rolled all three of those goddamn dice, so I'm sorry. Here's the biggest frustration with a digital die roller. I can't even take those things out back and throw them in the fire pit.
You can always break your computer.
People have done it. Came out swinging at my monitor right there, and I had to hold on to my desk.
It's cold comfort, but your plans and your thinking was perfect, like the OSR thinking. Like as Matt was saying, it's like you guys never enter into violence without like deep thought about like what you're going to be doing, and you did this same way. It was just a lot of your thought put into the plan was very dependent upon the shrieker continuing to shriek, which basically gave you the equivalent of silence. When that element was taken away, chance comes into it a little bit, you know. So, dice roll comes. You know, it's a classic OSR sort of thing. You know, it just sucked. It just sucked the way that it went down. You know, it's still felon, obviously, but
You first, Matt. Sorry.
I was going to say one other opportunity that I was hoping that somehow we would get, but we couldn't. Was that little like being able to use that ring as a signal kind of thing.
Yeah,
right? That's a good idea. Even if he was able to just like flicker or something, but he couldn't just due to positioning, right? Like he was right there in full view of the enemy. So if he had taken that the ring off and on to, because a little bit of difference in the timing, we could have started that distraction at a time that would have drawn people away, and maybe it would have been a little less crowded down there.
I did like how we were still able to kind of use the rings to provide a little bit of verisimilitude for your being aware of kind of what was going on. You know what I mean? That kind of was kind of cool.
It's fun. It's a great immersion story. I mean, like a couple thoughts. I don't want to backtrack too much, but like, you know, it's a great example, even beyond the rolling, right? Like the shrieker being one, the lift sealed door being the other, that like, even if you have a plan, even if you are adapting with a plan in the moment, as Mike and I were with like whether we should attack Cisco or not, like immediacy is affected by random chance, right? Like Ted hitting that door, failing the save versus spells. Mm-hmm. Getting, I keep messing his name up. The cook.
Irsko.
Yeah. Getting Irsko's attention back west created a prompt in which I don't think Mike or I, though we had discussed wanting to do it both on camera and like during our break, we're like, well, you want to, you know, whatever, had planned to do it yet. But it was like, okay, well, no, we have two apes, right? Like, because Ted has drawn the attention, this is emergently completely changed the timeline, which is why time is everything in OSR. Every interesting thing occurs because of time. I mean, it's the one thing that Gygax did well when he talked about recording in that way, right? Like, well, there are many things that did well, but you know, my point is like, it's so overlooked and it is so essential to an adaptive campaign.
It was huge in this one. I have never seen my tracker has never been this loaded with expirations and how each of those was extremely important to how the rest of the encounter would go. You know, it's, I'm looking at it right here. Like, we've never had it this fully loaded with stuff. It
was very, very fun. Beautiful. It's like, yeah, because we're not working with a script, obviously, right? Yeah. But what occurs because of the presence of time, right, is the unexpected for all of us, including John. Well, slightly more expected, but like how the confluence of these things occur is just like peak drama. I mean, it's so fun and exciting and terrifying and frustrating sometimes, but like it really is interesting because our decisions, you know, as we talked about, like, well, we're going to wait it out. We're going to wait it out. Can we wait it out anymore? Right? Yeah. What's our decision? Et cetera, et cetera. It really does change our emotional state and process.
The thing that kills me about it a little bit that's hard for me, but personally, like, obviously, John is the DM. I run a little bit too, right? The hard part for me is the arbitrary nature of how much time certain things take, right? And that's where I think, yes, you can have amazing records, but the group itself isn't like on agreement on how long it takes to search a room or how long it takes to, then it can become fuzzy math anyway, but we're kind of lucky that way. I mean, I think we're all on the same page for that. Like, I mean, we're lucky that John's really not the earmuffs, John, you know, I'm not trying to like kiss your ass here, but he's really good about like tracking, like how long things take and giving us a ruling on, okay, that took a turn or whatever that we're all okay with. You know, and not quibbling about.
It's a great example of what we've talked about, which is building trust, right? Yeah. Like, we trust him, he trusts us, we establish things over a long period of time. No pun, not pun, but redundancy, but it works, right?
I try to be arbitrary, I try to be arbitrary and realistic when I can. And when it is sort of, like you were talking about, Mike, a little bit nebulous, and you kind of have to make a judgment call, I've learned through the years of playing together and doing OSR now that to favor the players, I'm always on your side. So if it ever comes down to like a question of like, should I go hard or should I go easy? Like, I'm always going to try to give you the benefit of the doubt if at all possible, you know, but I never fudge the dice ever.
I mean, it always, you know, it feels organic. Like it feels fair. It feels realistic to what we're trying to do. And it doesn't break the story.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to ask, I don't know if you're comfortable with this, but if I think it'd be a great idea if you could post a picture of that time tracker. I don't know if it has any secrets on it or whatever.
Yeah, but I certainly can. I a long time ago, I sent like a picture of like all of my time trackers. This one is going to be completely illegible, but
I think people would love to see that.
Just from the sheer mess of it. Yeah, you'll get something.
There was so much stuff going on. Yeah. And I'm not going to let you forget. I want to know, and we got to keep track of more things going forward. My little mouse friend trying to open up the poop door.
I made a note. Yep.
And I want to, you know, we won't know how many or what the results of are those snakes around. So they're infested with snakes for a few turns, at least.
Speaking of tracking stuff, that was another thing that went unremarked upon mostly during the session because it was sort of out of everyone's view. But, I know everything stunk with the results of the session, but it would have been.
I had a blast. Don't worry about that.
I'm just saying, like you would be even more shits up Sheets Creek, even more, especially Mort, frankly, if Everisius had not done what he did. Basically, like those, like a lot of those baboons would have still been circling in the southern, would have been circulating throughout the southern areas if the Sticks to Snakes had not done its job, which they did perfectly. And drew most of the baboon population that you're aware of towards the northern areas, leaving Mort sort of for next session relatively free to move. You know, of course, Garlad's still down there, which is a huge if, you know, but it was well done, Matt. It was well done. Yeah.
Wonderfully done, Matt. I'm going to do this as quickly as I can. No one believes me. I just want to say the first thing I would say is like you talked about being on the side of the players. All I want to say about that, maybe it's self-evident to some people or not, but I think it's a great illustration of you can be on the side of your players. You can be permissive. You can be like rooting for them, and things can still be horribly lethal. They can still be consequential. They can still suck. I mean, I had fun, but you know what I mean? In other words, like, I don't know who might suggest this, but I think there's like implicitly sometimes a suggestion that like you either run a game that is like punitive, or in which like I'm a GM, therefore I have to like create friction constantly, right? Like, oh, well, it's not a story if I don't push back. And like, what does that mean? Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Often it doesn't actually manifest in good ways, if I'm being honest. And some GM, John's great about this. He's here. He's permissive. He's like encouraging. We're still eating shit. First thought. Second thought I would say is, I know, I thought I'd be quick. Second thought, I'm gonna do this one so fast.
That's right.
Matt's idea, great example of that. The pebble thing, right? Like, it's tough to manage as much as John is managing, and sometimes like I feel guilty if I'm like, John, remind, like, interrupting, be like, just remember, count the pebble, just because I want to know. But it's, though it kills conversationally the pacing sometimes, I want to always know as a player that I'm like reminding, or I'm being transparent about the many pieces that are working on, because a lot of what's going on in the game, as per evidence with Matt or John bringing up the ventriloquism thing at the beginning of the session, is like so much action, because we're doing time, so much action is happening kind of like outside of frame, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of the most important action happens outside of frame. A
lot of moving pieces.
And that's a weird, that's a weird thing to acclimate to if you're used to a type of game that is so centered on like plotting, where the only important thing ever happens on frame. So much of what we do is not what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing I was going to say.
It was a large mental load for me, but and I would definitely, if I'm offering a piece of advice to people out there watching, as far as running these sorts of games, like, you should lean into what David was saying and make sure that as a player that you remind your GM of things, even if you think it'll kill pacing, because it's better to kill pacing and make sure that we're all on the same page than having to like retcon it back after like, oh shit, I forgot about the pebble, or I forgot about the ventriloquism, you know, that sort of thing. Like, when you were dealing with this many factors, making sure that your GM is sort of aware of everything that's going on is key. But there's a fine line between that and rules luring it and try to get out of jams and stuff like that. You know, it's just make sure that we're aware of all the pieces that are in play. I think, is the lesson there.
I got three things I want to bring up before
Mike's always talking.
So number one, I think one thing that I just twigged onto, and I'm sure Matt has known this for a long time, is that, Matt, how many times can you cast Sticks of Snakes in a 24-hour period? Like, how many slots do you have for that?
Just the one, I think.
It's pretty high level.
It's a fourth level spell, so I only have one slot.
Okay, well, I'm just thinking is like, if we really want to just harry Garlad, we could just be popping into the plunger, casting like your Sticks to Snake spell, hoping we get poisonous ones, and just giving them like strike orders. And if we just do that once a day from like all the different entry points that we found in his thing, he's going to be he's going to lose monkeys. And second of all, he's just going to be irritated as shit where all these goddamn snakes coming from. And then number two, the other thing, see, I already forgot one of them. But the third one that I want to bring up is the fact that the biggest loss here today isn't Darius and it's not Mistophase. It's all the shit we are carrying, dude. Like, all the stuff we are carrying. Laryl's cloak is a major, major, major blow to our party in general. And it's just, it's like, fuck, man. I mean, sorry my language, but it's like that cloak has gotten us through more things than we can possibly even like, you know, add up on. And I got one more thing. I remember what it was. Okay. And then you can talk about all these points and I'll just be quiet. And then the third thing is we found out one really, really cool nugget from the one brief part of Garlad's conversation that he's basically hired the Setites to kill us, to like go after us. Right. Like that's like a thing. He traded like someone major to them as payment for them to just make our lives miserable wherever they find us. Yep. That's really important because the Setite market was on our list of places
to go. Very good point to bring up. And you guys should definitely go back when the episode is posted and listen to what he exactly said.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, I'm done. I'll be quiet now.
I can't think of that as anything but good news for one reason. And that is, we knew he was going to do that. Like, that's the very obvious thing that not necessarily the Setites, but we knew he was going to enlist somebody to do that. And knowing who that is hugely helpful to us because we don't have to look, you know, everywhere over our shoulders. We need to look specifically at a specific enemy, which is
the game is information, baby.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
That's the win. That is actually the win. Sorry.
The telegraph was there. The telegraph was there when you were on your way to the cave bear entrance on the thing. And I was like, Sisko's sitting there. Do you do anything? You know, and I understand the pressure that you were under, you know, but that was one of those decision points, you know, and that was, you know, you decided, which was totally fine. And it definitely paid off for you to stick with the heist, right? Do not get distracted. Mission critical. Right. But I was like, you know, making notes. I was like, okay, they're passing that by. I guess Garlad's going to do his thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always interesting. You always go ahead, Mike.
No, I'm just going to say, so now we have the dragon who will obliterate us if he finds us on the top floor. Right.
That's correct. Yes. You're right about that.
We have the Setites that want to destroy us. And now we have Garlad. So like three giant factions, probably far more powerful than the goblins, are all like AV club. And we're all like, except for you, Avaricios, thank you. We're all like first level, right? Like we're all like basically first or second level characters. And it's just this is becoming untenable.
Well, God, I don't have anything super insightful to say. Matt, 100%. It's so exciting to hear you say that, right? And even like, I won't go on about the door, but like every failure is an information point, right? And that is always exciting to me, even if it is a very difficult failure in a world that's living like we're dealing with it. It's power, right? It's still power. So 100% what you're saying. And yeah, I mean, like, again, it illustrates that like we knew Garlad was a timer from the minute we went there the first time, much less when like Onweir killed Isocrates, right? But there's so many compelling things going on that like ordering your priorities is like the toughest thing, right? It's so tough in a game of this scope with like the politic involved. It's not intrinsic to OSR there. It can be. It is a special component of Art and Vool, I think, right? But it has been so interesting to watch these things, like I said, off frame, mature.
Right? Yeah.
In ways that you can't possibly deal with. And in ways in which like, however you might define victory, right? Very foolishly, if you thought you ever could. But, you know, like, I'll put it a different way. What's exciting about it is that, like, though we can do heroic actions, we aren't the center of this universe.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And we could never be, no matter, even if we were always successful, we could never be, because there's too much going on and living outside of us that we can't be solipsistic like that. It can't be like, oh, the plot's for me, like I drive everything here. You could never. So you're going to fail more than you succeed if you define failure as like too many things to tend to, period.
It's also
no
like
how successful you do
is a big factor is the fact that you exposed yourself. Like you ended up leaving. you left your safe haven and you went as a party back into a very dangerous area. A huge plus on your guys when you're facing all these numerous faction threats is that you have aligned yourself solidly with a faction that you yourselves have made more powerful than it was before. So everyone's going to think twice about moving against you in force as long as that you are hold up with the goblins, right? But the moment that you delve, anyone who's aware is going to target you. Well, your enemies are going to target you, and you're very, very vulnerable, right? Like that blanket protection is over you while you're in the goblin halls. But obviously the moment you leave, it's a problem. Two things that I wanted to bring up just so that you're making the connections in case you haven't, so you can dwell on it, is that, who was the prisoner that Garlad and Sisko were taking to the Setites? Right. Re-listen to what I had to Garlad say.
Their slaver, right? Like their chief slaver or something. Yeah.
So you got to figure that, assuming that the scholars at the West Gate were actually Setites, right? And you know already from your experiences on the long stair with Team C that they're divided into two. Like there's the Guild of Service, and then there's like the priests, right? So You already were up Schitt's Creek with the service branch of the Setites, right? And now it's pretty obvious that Garlet has talked to the other branch as well and has given them something that they were greatly desired, right? In return for helping them out. So just be aware that if you had any inclinations about like going to the Forum of Set but staying away from the slavers, now it's like a even a bigger problem now, right? Like the
stay away from everybody.
Yeah, the Setites. What I'm saying is the Guild of Service has a reason to actively hunt you down because of what you've done to them on the Long Stair. But the other half of the Setites have made a deal with Garilad, right, and to help them out in their search, but they don't really have a particular need to hate you unless you're drawing the conclusion that these Guild of Service has also told them what happened in the Long Stair. But I did tell you before that they, it's quite likely that because they are a prideful, hateful sort of people, that the Guild of Service may have been too embarrassed to actually relay that information, what happened, right? That in mind. And then second, totally unrelated, just want to make sure that you're aware, Mort went in there as a spider to the Library of Thoth, searched all around that library, and conclusively said that there was no exit out of there. Yet, Lysion told Matt, which is a hard truth, that there was another exit from the library.
It's in the book. It's a book somewhere. It's got to be.
Okay.
Right? I'm hearing that we need to get some plasma rifles and hit that Long Stair commando style.
As far as the library, though, don't forget that Garilad had mentioned to Sisko as they were walking down the corridor that that both Isocrite. Yeah, exactly, Matt. Yeah,
there are two libraries, so there may be an exit, but not out of this one.
Yeah, I think that's
probably interesting.
Nicely done, Matt.
You know, the other thing that we really shouldn't overlook, because it's another silver lining on this shit cloud, is the brand recognition. Like right now, AV Club is on everybody's lips, right? The Setites know who we are. Garilad knows who we are. Goblins know who we are. Man, we're making it. We're gonna be
winning, baby, winning.
You are the only original member. The rest of us are a revolving cast of jackasses. Like,
I keep hoping I'll get some good ones.
Yeah. When do the good guys show up for them?
Keep hoping, bud.
The secret is that we're all retainers, right? Also, Abnus has been drunk this whole time, and we're just a figment of his imagination. He's just
The funny thing is like
that's in the final. The final.
He never made it out of the Sturge Tower. He just
tripping. Yeah.
The funny thing too is that Mort is like a standard old school veteran of the AV Club. Yet that was Ted's third character.
This is my second character, Derek.
You lost Gorind, right? That was the only person you've lost.
Gorind, right? But I was just counting Darius, but technically he's still alive. But I mean, do we really want to role play me being tortured by monkeys however long? I want to play that game, John. I just don't think I'm going to be.
We'll have to discuss off camera, because we won't. It all depends on what you guys want to do. Like, if you're going to mount a rescue effort, then we'll figure that out. But if if you have something else in mind, we'll have you take another character. Well, David obviously will. Mike, you're going to have to. Well, I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to feel it out. It's a tricky situation.
All right. I mean, working in our favor is, that locate objects spell that we have access to.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's going to help us find any of the individual things that we might want to get. Laurel's cloak, if I remember correctly, you could only tell that thing's magical if you have true sight.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, even if you detect magic, you don't get anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
this also depends on Garilad's motives, right? Like, he's got all that gear in his chamber, right? But you have to think about what kind of man is Garilad. Will he give a shit about any of it? How deeply will he go into it? Who knows? We'll have to see. We'll have to decide if we stay in this focus Well, I don't know. Yeah. We'll just have to kind of figure it out.
Figure out what we want to do.
They haven't left. Everyone's still trapped. Mort is trapped. Avaricius, you guys could probably beat a retreat, but you're not at the exit. You're in a room down the hall, right? So
we're right by the, we're like, you know,
they're right by the pyramid,
50 yeah. feet from the,
that's
from
true, the pyramid. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. They could definitely just take off if they wanted to.
Yeah. And Mort has the ring now, and he can signal to us, the group, once he puts it on. So that's good.
What I would likely do is, if assuming that we stay with the group here, which we will have to, is that Mike and David, that you will probably most likely have to pick up y'all and Elizabeth for that time being until we figure something else out. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool.
Be interesting stuff. We'll see what happens.
Very much like to cause Garlad to lose some of those monkeys. We have not been able to successfully kill any of the big ones.
The big ones are super fucking nasty. They are. I mean, obviously, you know, you got some dead, some died because of your poison snakes there, Matt, if I didn't make that clear. Yeah. So,
nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, another great move by Matt in discerning the fact that what we've been speculating for a very long time, that the monkeys aren't magically influenced by Garlad.
Yeah.
So scorched earth is what I'm saying. I'm not trying to save these guys anymore. Like, I was trying to play a nice guy, but no.
And that they're still hostile to us, even if we somehow managed to kill Garlad.
Right.
Another thing that I sort of underplayed, but don't forget that Trefco is still a factor.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We kind of dished like what was going on with him since everything went to shit. But don't forget that when Garlad sort of said something to him at the Well of Light, his shoulders slumped.
Yeah.
Wasn't too happy about what he heard. And then he was sort of left there, and then everything sort of went to hell. But Darius, you didn't see him whenever you were dragged to the north, to the Hall of Judgment. So
we also did hear them like chastise Trefco, even though he wasn't in the room. They were like, that old monkey just can't like
hold it down anymore.
Lost a step. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So just be aware that Trefco's still in play. You know, might be another lever to pull. Never know.